namate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Ugrasenam cha vitaram.
Yarubhojandakaripam.
Svayam nigriha bhubuje.
Surasenam
mahabala. Ugrasenam. Under Ugrasena. Cha and Pitaram, who was his own father, Yadu of the Yadu dynasty, Bhoja of the Bhoja dynasty, Andaka of the Andaka dynasty, Adipam, the king, Swayam, personally. Nigrihiya, subduing. Bhubhuje, enjoyed. Surasenan, all the states known as Surasena. Mahabalan, the extremely powerful Kamsa. Translation. Kamsa, the most powerful son of Ugrasena, even imprisons his own father, the king of the Yadu, Bhoja, and Andaka dynasties, and personally ruled the states known as Surasena. Purport. The state known as Mathura was also included within the states known as Surasena. Well, actually, it's a one-sentence purport with 14-page notes. So, additional notes for this chapter. Regarding transmigration of the soul, Srila Madhvacharya gives the following notes. When one is awake, whatever one sees or hears is impressed upon the mind, which later works in dreams to show one different experiences, although in dreams one appears to accept a different body. For example, when one is awake, one does business and talks with customers. And similarly, in dreams, one meets various customers, talks about business, and gives quotations. Madhvacharya says, therefore, that dreams take place according to what one sees, hears, and remembers. When one reawakens, of course, one forgets the body of the dream. This forgetfulness is called apasmriti. Thus we are changing bodies because we are sometimes dreaming, sometimes awake, and sometimes forgetful. Forgetfulness of our previously created body is called death, and our work in the present body is called life. After death, one cannot remember the activities of one's previous body, whether imaginary or factual. So here we have a slightly different angle on what's life and death and what is generally thought of. Generally, we think of life and death as what's connected with the body. But the point is the body is anyway dead. It is just dead matter. Somehow or another, by the influence of the soul, then it stays basically together, though it is constantly changing. And that situation in which it is born, it appears, it grows, it maintains, it multiplies, it dwindles, it disappears. Then we call life. When it appears, we call it birth. When it disappears, we call it death. But actually, what's going on is simply the activities of the mind, in that it is being projected into this situation. And in this situation, then it is able to be appreciated in this life as a problem. See, we generally see things through gross matter. This is the difficulty. We approach this world, we see things, we value it according to what we see, what we can gain. But actually, Madhvacharya is pointing out is it's not. It's just a matter of wakeful dreaming and asleep states. And in those situations, then we are able to, we consider them in connection with the externals. The dream is also a reflection of the externals that we have experienced in the daytime. We experience things in the daytime, and then that creates impressions. Those impressions then depending upon how much they've impressed us, then those will appear in our dreams. Right? Or they will appear when we're forgetful, when we are like daydreaming or absorbed in something else. So then all those things will happen. I don't think this is the favorable place. You know, because, see, the temple, things working smoothly are actually temple administration. Pujari see the puja goes on, but the administration has to see that these other things happen. Otherwise, it can't work. One can't expect that the pujaris, or the person giving the class, is going to maintain discipline. So, the whole idea is that there's a subtler perception that is there in life that we may not be so aware of because of the importance of, to us, of gaining experience, or not gaining experience, enjoying the experience. Right? Enjoying the experience. Then what happens is then we put ourselves in a situation to gain experience. And then in those situations of experience, then we enjoy or suffer. But whether we're enjoying or suffering, the two of them are experience. And those experiences then give us some taste. Because taste is what we're looking for. We're actually looking for taste. So then taste can be had, means there's 12 main kinds of taste. So we see in many of those, you know, anger or fear, horror, ghastliness. They're not necessarily so wonderful or so pleasant, but in any case, they're a taste. So the living entity wants taste, and they'll do whatever they can to get it. So depending upon what taste is major for us, or minor for us, then those will have more, will make a deeper impression, or less deep impression. So deeper impressions many times will come in our daydreams, will come in our dreams at night, and that will then establish our mood. That will establish how we view things. And then we'll contemplate those, so we'll be living in those worlds. So when we're sleeping at night, when we're daydreaming, we're not within the body. So our experience is actually not the body. The body is only when we're working within the body, then we have that experience. So generally we take life and death as connected with the body. But here Madhvacharya points out that it's nothing to do with that. It's remembrance and forgetfulness. So death means complete forgetfulness of the previous life, you know, in the conscious state. Though impressions still may be there in the unconscious state, or in the daydreaming or sleeping state. So if that understanding is there, then we see that there's a lot more to what we would call life than just our day-to-day grind in which we try to do the practical and get what we consider a value for this body. It means the body is there, it exists, it's real, so it must be taken care of. But whether one needs to be attached to that or not, that's another thing. Right? This is the question. The question is not whether one has material possessions or not, whether one endeavors for them or not, how one endeavors for them or not, so much. The main thing is whether there's attachment for them or not. That is the main thing. What binds us here is the attachment, it's not the things. Right? Means this world is full of things. So, but how do people get liberated from this world of things? Because they give up their attachment for it. So what we call our world or reality is what is our circle of attachment. That's all. Everybody has their own unique circle. Now, there's a lot of overlapping, of course. That's how you have friends, and you have relatives, or you have, you know, some groups of people who have common interests and values, because their sphere of attachment overlaps. So there's some common attachment there. Like, you know, like a family, they're commonly attached to the same house. You know, and they're, you know, like this, or they're commonly attached to the same bathroom. And then it creates a problem because everyone's trying to get into that same bathroom. Right? So this is actually the view. But we tend to view it from the externals. So then the externals become very important for us. All the different things, gaining those things, maintaining those things, expanding those things, and if we're pious, even giving things away to others, and we can feel, you know, happy that we are helping others also, you know, gain their things. Because the body is a thing, everything that's connected with it is things, right? So then we become absorbed in this world of things. So like that, we have to be, Madhvacharya is trying to point out that we should take it to another step. And this here is not to the spiritual platform yet. This we're just talking about the subtle body. This point here is just being aware that the subtle body is there, and that's actually what's going on. Say what we like, it's the subtle body that is life, what we know it as. Not the gross body. The gross body, you can be starving one moment, and then something that very much interests you come up. You can forget that hunger for a long time. I mean, very long time. Hours. Right? And if it's like this, you just forget it. So, therefore, it's the mind. The mind is satisfied in a situation. It can do that forever. It will forget about these others. It's unsatisfied, then it has to change. So the body's hungry. Like, if kids are playing, they don't care if they're hungry. Right? Because for them, they're attached to the fun. So the mind is attached to the fun. Well then, if the hunger grows where it's more of a problem than they're gaining happiness from the fun, then the mind becomes attached to curing that hunger. Right? Then that becomes the sphere of activity. Right? Then after eating, then that's problem solved. Now, back to fun. Right? Then they go back to playing. So all it is the mind's moving from one object to the next. That's actually what's happening. But because that is manifest through the gross body and the situation that the gross body is in, therefore it becomes valuable, because it's through those mediums that you taste. Right? You have the feeling of security because you have something. One has some money or a house or relatives or friends or some power or some position. All these things, then one feels one is secure. Right? So, but it's that feeling of security, it's not the things. Right? We've seen so many people with so many things. and in a moment it's gone. I've heard, you know, devotees talking, you know, just in their lifetime, they have seen or experienced that a war starts, and either the army comes in, or the opposing army comes in, and says, you know, basically, you have 10 minutes to take whatever you want and leave this place. Right? So, what did it do for them? Their position, their home, their money. It didn't help them at all. Right? It just didn't help them. And this is things that I've heard of happening within the last 10 years. And they're very much a reality. So it's not that they do anything for us. But being the medium of exchange means if you have the house, then in that it's a place where you can have exchange with the family and friends. You have your clothes, it's a medium of exchange. Others appreciate, don't appreciate. You know, food, and all these different things are mediums of exchange. Therefore, they become valuable. But the real thing is that exchange. That's what the living entity is looking for. But they mistake it in the gross. But it's not actually the thing. Right? It's not. You become attached to those things which give you your happiness now. Whatever is your exchange is through the medium, you become attached to that. If that's unavailable, then out of need you will find another set of another medium through which you're going to gain what you want. So then your value will change. So if money is getting you what you want, then you can't live without money. You can't figure out how you live without money. But somehow or another, plenty of people are living with not much money. Right? You see people on the side of the road, they're there, they're sitting there with their babies and their family, and you know, they're having a whole family scene right there on a piece of plastic on the sidewalk. Right? It's happening. And you can't say that the quality of exchange between the individual members of that family is any different or any less than a person who's on the, you know, the Upper West Side in the 87th floor. It's not going to be any different. Right? That is the point. See, because the externals are seen to be superior and inferior, then the rich person considers his happiness is superior to the person who's poor. But factually, there's no difference. Right? It doesn't matter. Because it's not the body or the things that actually create the happiness, the attachment to. So because richness is your circle of attachment, therefore you consider you're happy. And if you're not rich, you'll consider you're unhappy. Right? Or if you're powerful, you know, or whatever it is that makes important to you, you will consider it is you are happy when you have what is your circle of attachment. When you don't have it, you will consider I'm not happy. Right? That's all. It's nothing to do with what is actually around you. It's just gaining what the mind wants is called happiness. Losing what it wants is called unhappiness. It's that simple. So, therefore, we can see that the states of wakefulness, sleep, or this dreaming, they're actually not different if they're not connected with the Lord. Because whether you are dealing in an awakened state with dead matter, or you're dealing with dead matter in a dreaming state, it's still dead matter. And it doesn't actually satisfy the soul, which is eternal. But the whole idea is that one steps from one platform of understanding to the next. It's logical, right? I mean, sentiment one can gain in a moment. One gains some very nice understanding. The sentiment is there. But sometimes we see that sentiment changes because the mind is always changing. It's very fickle. So, therefore, one wants to take the mind and everything through these stages, one after another, gradually. Then it adjusts its vision, what its value is. So if the value is spiritual attainment, and one uses whatever tools one has for that, then the spiritual attainment becomes what is important for us. And the medium is secondary. Does that make some sense? It means, let us say we want to engage our body, you know, our mind, other things in the Lord's service. So whatever facilities go with that, we engage those in the Lord's service. So having engaged them in the Lord's service, that's real happiness. Because that will never go away. But the medium that we use, this body or the things of this body, our friends, relatives and that, that's temporary. That's a temporary arrangement. So then that temporariness, that shouldn't be the focus. It's there, it has to be dealt with, but it's not the focus. Right? Like when you cook, you're not focusing on the pot or on the spoon or on the container that the spices are in, you know, or the quality of the counter. No, those are, you use those. The better the quality is, of course, the easier it is to get good results. But the result of getting the cooked food, that is what you're trying to gain. So therefore, the body, the mind, what is connected to all of them, is only a medium for actual spiritual understanding, spiritual experience, spiritual satisfaction. Therefore, one should see that it's actually, you're dealing with an illusion. It's a real illusion, it means it's there, it exists. The illusion doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It exists. What's the illusory aspect is our attachment to it and the value we place to it as important for our being. For our being, we simply need to be God conscious and have exchange, eternal exchange with the Lord. That's the real need. And to do that, then we may have to go through our conditioned situation and engage that. So therefore, we need to have those things. But it's not an ultimate need. It's only a stepping stone to the higher need of God consciousness. So with that light, then we can't take things as seriously as we may take them. We get so emotionally involved and so bent out of shape and so disturbed. It's not worth it. Because it's temporary anyway. Right? We don't get upset that the flower wilted on the tree or in the vase. Because that's just the way it is. Everyone knows they wilt. So why get so disturbed? And you stand there as it's wilting, then you are also wilting. And it's not worth it. So, you know, it's just the way it is, but it's a wonderful medium of expression, of sentiment. Right? Devotional sentiment is expressed through these things. So therefore, we use it. But we have to be very, very careful to distinguish that real experience is spiritual. And material experience, whether it's in the wakefulness or in the dream state, is temporary and illusory because of not being connected to Krishna. So any comments or questions on this? Yes, ma'am. She was just saying that She's been here so many years, you know, in Mayapur, and that she never took the opportunity to cook for the deities when they come on the elephant procession, like, you know, many of the devotees, they do. So, you know, so many excuses are there, you know, the time or this or it's late, you know, something is always there. The mind is pretty good at dreaming up excuses. So then yesterday she just did it. She decided, I'm just going to do it. And then she was so happy from doing it, cooking for the Lord, doing something for the deities and all that. So the experience is that service that is done. The medium is actually secondary. The medium becomes important in its connection to the Lord, like that. So you could, you know, so the cooking for the Lord, or singing, or dancing, whatever it is, these are all mediums. So that if you do that, then that happiness that's gained, that's real. That's not material awake or material dreaming. That's actually spiritual awake, like that. So that's the experience. Anything else? Duality, suffering, and enjoyment. Yeah. Oh, okay. How does one overcome the duality of suffering and enjoyment, since it's not the soul that suffers and enjoys? The soul suffers and enjoys, or experiences suffering and enjoying. He doesn't suffer or enjoy. He experiences that because of his attachment to the material situation. That's actually what's going on. You see, if you're attached to something, then when it's favorable towards that attachment, then it's called happiness. If it goes the opposite, it's not favorable for that attachment. It reduces the prosperity of that. Then we call that suffering. So the soul, because of its nature of ananda, of happiness, therefore experience is very important for it. Right? The soul can't live without experience. And from that experience there should be some emotion. Right? That's what the soul is. The soul is made of this, but it's made of spiritual emotion. But in this world you can't get that, so it's reflected. That's why the soul is very, it's situation is very small, while what's around is very great. The body and everything else is very great. So then we become distracted by that, and then we surrender ourselves to the gain and loss of material situations or things as our happiness and distress. Like that. So we buy into it. It's just like, let's say, one may, you know, it may seem a little subtle or, no, I'm really experiencing. But let us take, you are reading a book or watching a movie. Now in there you have the hero and heroine, so when they're together you're happy. When they're apart and they're suffering, you're suffering. Right? If it's a happy ending, you're happy. If it's a bad ending, you're bummed out. You know, so like that. Then, but you had nothing to do with it, right? Not only that, the thing itself was just words on the page or flickering of lights, right? They call it the silver screen. It's just flickering of lights, that's all it is. But it creates something that we can identify with. Right? And then identifying with that, we give ourselves to that, we surrender to that. And then we experience happiness and distress based on others' happiness and distress. So let alone our own, even others are extended or even extended beyond. Right? So it's just a matter of what is our view. If we see things in connection to Krishna, then we don't experience material suffering and happiness. Right? Then it's spiritual. But if we connect it with this world, then it's material. So this whole thing of vicariously enjoying, that basically is the nature of the soul. The natural position is when the soul sees Krishna enjoying, they're happy. And when Krishna is not happy, he's unhappy. That's the natural position. And then here in this world, then the more distant is when others are happy, we're happy. Right? And when they're not happy, we're not happy. Or even if we take it, no, what about my own personal happiness? But we're not the body. We're not the mind. It's dead matter. So therefore we project vicariously into that. When we think, I'm enjoying this, you're not enjoying this. The senses are meeting the sense objects. The soul is vicariously enjoying that. Because it's accepted that as its medium for enjoyment. You understand? So therefore the soul's natural position is vicarious. Enjoyment. And because that's the nature of it, one is happy, right? One is happy when one hears a good story or goes nicely for others. One's happy, sincerely happy. So you can imagine that on this platform, let alone on this transcendental platform. Therefore, the soul's natural position is to serve Krishna, and when he's pleased, we're pleased, right? Like the leaves don't take the water, the roots take the water. But the root, water goes on the root, the leaves are pleased. You water the leaves, they're not pleased. So that's the nature of the soul. Is that okay?
You're mentioning that the rich man and the poor man basically enjoy the same relationship, although the rich man is more elevated and the poor man is more simple. But in Upanishad we hear that sometimes that the demigods enjoy 10,000 times more, and Priyaspati enjoys 10,000 times more, and Prajapati more, and Brahma, so on. So how you can understand that? They are also more sophisticated and they enjoy, or just actually is more?
The question is that, you know, about the rich person, the poor person, their experience. So then, what we hear in the Upanishad that the different species of life, the humans, how much they enjoy, then more than that, the demigods enjoy. So then the question is then, what's the difference then? So basically speaking, just the senses are more refined so they can appreciate more aspects of it. So that will be there. But within demigods, basically it'll be the same, you know? The experience is still the same, it's just the depth that one goes in it. But if one's perception is smaller, then it takes a smaller amount of, experience to fill up that perception. You understand? The very simple person, something very simple, is all-encompassing for them. Their happiness knows no bounds. For someone who is very sophisticated, that small amount of pleasure they won't find very pleasing. So for them it takes a great amount. But still, when one is full with happiness, that experience is the same. So therefore, it may be 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 times more than us, needs the sophistication, but they're on that level, so therefore it doesn't mean anything to them. Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. We can say the enjoyment may be more in comparison, but in actual experience, it's the same. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Just like here, our experience is 100 years of life. The demigods, for us, may live 10,000 years, 100,000 years, millions of years, but for them, the experience is only 100 years. So we can say, yes, their enjoyment is more, or their lifespan is longer. But from our perspective, but from their perspective, it's the same. That's the point. Right? That's the point. Okay, spiritual happiness is eternal, it comes and goes. It means the effect of it is there, and if basically spiritual happiness is appreciated when we're spiritual. So when one connects to that level, one experiences it. Once one's not connected to that level, one may not be able to appreciate it. But that experience is always there. Well, the material experiences, they're temporary, they disappear. So, as we would call it, they're there in the mind, as long as the mind remembers. Therefore, when the mind doesn't remember, it's called death. So then those experiences are wiped clean. So there's some underlying subtle experience, you know, that, you know, you're afraid of spiders or something, you know, because of some situation in which there are too many spiders. But the experience of being disturbed by the spiders is forgotten, but the underlying, you know, nature of being wary of spiders, that will remain. That can remain into the next lives. But the spiritual, meaning that whatever is there, that happiness is there, and then the next spiritual experience goes on top of that. And the next one on top of that. In the material world, you get a happiness, then it drops off, and you have to get something else at that same level, and then that'll drop off. And then another thing. The spiritual means it's there. And then on the spiritual platform, another spiritual experience is on top of that. It's added to. So it's unlimitedly added to. So the longer one's on the transcendental platform, then the greater one's happiness is. Is that okay? In the conditioned state, we experience spiritual happiness. Yes, a glimmer we can get like that. When we value it, that that is happiness, then we will find that the mind will automatically situate itself there. The mind is only going to go where it finds happiness. It's not going to go somewhere else. You know, even if unhappy is its happiness, that's where it will go. Right? You know, distressful situations, because they create an experience, sometimes are considered happy. Therefore, you find some people are always looking for a bad situation. They can never, even if it's good, they'll have to find something bad about it. Right? And in that bad state, then they're actually happy. Though their experience is unhappiness, but that experience makes them happy. You know, they can't handle something would be nice. It has to be bad. They have to find something. They have to break it down. They have to find the fault. Like that. So for them, it's a constant experience, right? Like that. Because that's easy to do. It's easy to find fault in things, even if it doesn't have. So it's like a guaranteed, steady experience. Like that. While actual happiness, you know, is more fleeting. Like that. So then the point is to get that experience. So if the mind has understood that the spiritual experience is the real source of happiness, the mind will go there. So that's why association is so important and those things that purify. Because by doing that, then the mind is exposed more to those spiritual situations. And then it gets more of an idea that something is there, some taste is there. Then it will slowly be drawn towards that, till eventually that becomes the majority. Once you cross 51%, then it's basically goes very quickly, like that. Then the mind gets more out of the spiritual and the material, so basically it'll always be in the spiritual unless it gets distracted by the material. But before that, it generally will be in the material, unless the spiritual situation kind of is very prominent. Yeah? And that stage is called ruchi, taste. Okay? So it ends with Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srimad Prabhupada ki, Salavita Bhaktivinda ki, Tanya Tango, Bhaktivinda ki.